Thank you very much. And now to introduce the distinguished visitor to Tennessee, it is my great pleasure to bring to this platform the distinguished governor of Tennessee, the Honorable Buford Ellington.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Snodgrass. You know, when all is said and done, the people of Tennessee and the people of this nation must make a very basic decision. Which candidate can provide the best leadership for this nation? Leadership by a man who has ability and the courage to apply fresh thinking and new ideas to crucial problems we face at this time. The Vice President's capacity in this regard was clearly illustrated in his address to the nation last night. And the people's capacity to select the best leadership will clearly emerge in the coming weeks. Therefore, I am working hard, I support, and I hope all Tennesseans will join with us to support a man of action, a man of courage, a man who deeply believes in America, a great friend of Tennessee and its people. Hubert Humphrey will be the next President of the United States, Mr. Vice President.
Vice President Humphrey, wearing a medium blue suit, a dark blue tie, smiling to
Thank
the crowd.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Governor Ellington. Thank you, Governor. What a wonderful, wonderful Democratic day this is. The sun is shining in the state of Andrew Jackson, Estes Kefauver, Cordell Hull, Buford Ellington, Senator Albert Gore, Governor Browning, Governor Clements, and thousands of Democrats. That's the kind of a state I like. And Mayor Briley, may I commend you on this wonderful city of yours and the great work that you're doing here in the redevelopment of this magnificent, historical, and yet modern city of Nashville. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I feel good today. I just read in the paper this morning that there's a possibility that Mr. Nixon might join me in debate somewhere along the line. Then I read down it, the way it read, it said in the beginning, there's a Republican team that has come to Nashville. And I said, you know, I bet that's the advance guard for the Republican nominee. And then the paragraph, second paragraph, oh, it broke my heart. The second paragraph said it's the Republican Truth Squad, and I knew that Mr. Nixon couldn't be in that. Well, my friends, I sent my truth squad in here about a week ago. Just a one-lady truth squad. I had Mrs. Humphrey here. And I want to thank Governor and Mrs. Ellington. I want to thank all the good people of Nashville and the state of Tennessee for their graciousness, their kindness, their hospitality to my Muriel. Mrs. Humphrey, she's my secret weapon. I always say, if you have a little doubts about me, Don't worry, she'd make a great first lady, and the only way you can get her is to make me the first man. But I thought maybe that I'd entice the leader of the Republican Party to come out from the shadows, to come out under that Madison Avenue confetti parades that he has, and come out and talk, stand up like a man and face the audiences and speak on the issues. Because I told Muriel, Mrs. Humphrey, I said, when you go to Nashville, now you set an example. Maybe you can flush him out. I can't. You stand there and you answer the tough questions. You hold a press conference. You talk about everything from Vietnam to the economy. You show them that two members of the Humphrey family are willing to stand up and face the tough questions. But it didn't work. I tell you, all you can do now is compare her courage to Mr. Nixon's lack of it and his refusal. And his refusal to face the American people in debate. The American people aren't going to buy Brand X in 1968, even if it's advertised on TV. I think it's time to strip off the wrapper and see what's underneath. I hear about the new Nixon. Some of you knew the old Nixon. And what you got to be thinking about is the real Nixon. That's the one that'll bother you. You know, I had a lot of advice about this trip. Some people said, "Do you think you ought to go?" And I said, "Why not?" They said, "Well, that's Wallace country." Well, that's what I figured. That's what I figured. And then somebody said to me, "No, no, that's not Wallace country. That's Nixon country." I knew that wasn't true. And then after that, they all ran for cover. Well, my friends, I'll tell you what kind of a country I think this is. It's American country, and the best country you can find. And I'm running for the presidency of the United States. And I'm running to be president of the United States, all 50 states, every one of the states in this great republic. And I'm running to be the president of that band over there, that Tennessee State A&I University band. And I'm running to be president of the United States of those folks over there that are carrying those signs and aren't carrying those signs, and even some that are carrying signs that I don't like. I'm running for them too. So I want to talk to you about this American country, because the American people are going to go to the polls in November. And it's then when the voice of the people will be heard, and they'll have to decide two very great questions. Which party, which candidate for president can most surely guide this nation down the pathways of peace? That's question number one. And last night, I spoke to this nation about the hard facts of war and peace. I gave you a plan for peace in Vietnam, and I gave you a plan for peace in the world, and I'd like to hear from the opposition what they have in mind. I believe that we can achieve an honorable peace in Vietnam, and this will be the first priority of a Humphrey Muskie administration if this tragic war is still being fought when I assume office. I've spoken how I believe this peace can be achieved, and now I repeat it. I think the American people deserve equal candor from Mr. Nixon, and I'm waiting to hear what he has to say. Unless that was some of his speakers that I just heard a moment ago. Now, the second great decision of this election relates to the kind of an America, the kind of a society that we'll have for ourselves, and more importantly, for our sons and our daughters, and our grandsons and our granddaughters. I've come to the South, to this great border state, to talk about this issue forthrightly, openly, and responsibly. For this is the time to speak the plain, harsh truths, not because they're popular, but because the price of silence may represent the end of our system of government as we know it, and our ideals of a free society and of liberty itself. Now, there are forces abroad in this land striving to divide and to embitter our people. There are radical extremists of the right and of the left, white and black, demagogues, my friends, who preach fear, who preach hate, and who preach division. And I've heard and I've seen these extremists who chant and disrupt meetings and who seek to deny freedom of speech to persons with whom they disagree. And I want to make it very clear from this platform, I think that any man that seeks any office in this land, regardless of the views that he may hold, is entitled to a respectful hearing without disturbance anywhere. The beginning of law and order is right here where we are now. I believe in dissent, and I've practiced it all my life. Decent dissent, discussion, dialogue, debate, peaceful dissent, yes. But disorder, no. No disorder. Disorder is not dissent. Indeed, disorder, especially organized disorder, is the enemy of responsible dissent and democracy. Destruction is not debate. Indeed, the violence of destruction can only silence the vitality of debate. So I reject these extremists. I want none of them. And I call upon the American people to reject them outright. Now, there's another form of radical extremism, just as dangerous, just as corrosive to our liberties. The extremism of those who preach disrespect for our courts, for certain laws, who play on the basest fears and the deepest suspicions of our people. The extremists who hate a man because of his religion, or because of his race, or because of the way he spells his name. And mark my words carefully, the strategy of organized hate, if left unanswered and unchecked, can lead this great nation of ours to disaster just as surely as the radical tactics of the provocateurs and the shouters and the disruptors can lead this country to the same tragic fate. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty now. Let's talk about it. The former governor of a great state, of a great people, the former governor of Alabama says he's running on a platform of law and order. I want to talk to you about law and order. When he was governor of Alabama, he gave the American people quite a demonstration of law and order. He decided which courts suited him, and he disobeyed the rest. He decided which judges he liked, and he insulted the rest. He decided which laws he preferred, and he tried to violate the others. Now he proposes teaching the Wallace method to the whole country. We won't take it, and let's make it clear from this audience. He says if he gets to be president, he says if he's president, he will see to it that there's law and order. Well, in America, the business of law enforcement, thank goodness, the business of the police, thank goodness, rests with state and local authorities and not with the federal government. I can't imagine a man that believes in states' rights who wants a federal police force. I don't want a federal police force. What a president can do is by deed, by word, by conduct, to so educate and inspire the American people that they will want to observe the law. A president can go to the Congress and ask that Congress to help the mayor, Mayor Briley here, a great mayor. Go to this Congress and help this governor, Governor Buford Ellington, one of the great governors of this land. A president can go and do those things. But the president of the United States is not a sheriff. He is the president of the United States of America and all that that means. Now, Mr. Wallace was governor of the state with the highest murder rate in the nation. He couldn't even maintain order in his own state where he had the power. And he does have the power as a governor where he had the power. But now he promises to maintain order in every city and state where he will not have any power unless he violates the Constitution of the United States. Now, I was a mayor of a great city like this Nashville. I'm the only candidate that's been the mayor of a great city where the problems take place. I was the mayor of Minneapolis, Minnesota, a city of over 500,000 people, and I had the chance to be tested on law and order, not by my speeches, but by what happened. I cleaned up a police department. I fought organized crime and street violence. And I brought law and order to the city of Minneapolis, and not even my worst critic has ever denied that that happened. It got law and order. And I compiled a record which received the commendation of the Federal Bureau of Investigation for outstanding law enforcement. And I'm ready to do the same thing as President of the United States. I'm ready to support our state and local police. I'm ready to give them the help that they desperately need to stop crime and lawlessness. I'll do something besides put on bumper stickers. You know, you see those bumper stickers, support your police? I'll tell you how you support your police. Not by bumper stickers. You support them by money, by training, by equipment, by better salaries, by a coordinated attack between federal, state, and local authorities. That's the way you do it. You don't get law and order on the cheap. John Kennedy once said, peace and freedom are not cheap, and law and order and justice are not cheap, but they're absolutely essential, and the federal government can help. And when I'm your president, Mr. Governor, and Mr. Mayor, when I'm your president, we will help, but we're going to leave it up to you to do what needs to be done in Nashville and Tennessee, and we're not going to run it out of Washington. Now I hear once in a while that my friend from Alabama has even got a few friends amongst the working people. Now let's take a look at that. He did some very interesting things as governor. Alabama housewives paid the highest sales tax in the country. 6 cents on the dollar. Now is that what you want? You can get it. You can get it. And if that's what you want, you'll get it. Wages for the working man in Alabama were the third lowest in the nation. All right, Mr. Worker, is that what you want? You can get it. All you got to do is mess around here a little longer, and you'll get it. And in education, there are only two states that spend less per pupil than in Alabama. So mothers and fathers, if that's what you want for your children, you can get it. Just go ahead and mess around and vote for it. That's all. You'll get it. And it has one of the lowest workman's compensation systems of any state in the union. And these are the accomplishments. And this is the record that the third party candidate wants to bring to Washington. Listen, we got enough trouble in Washington without bringing that to Washington. But I'll say this. If I were a citizen of Alabama, and if I worked on a payroll in Alabama, I'd surely do everything I could to keep Mr. Wallace out of Montgomery, and certainly out of Washington. Both. But my friends, this is not all. The most serious threat arises from his calculated campaign to divide this nation, to deliberately inflame the fears, the frustrations, and the prejudices of our people, and to bring this nation, and it will, to the brink of broad-scale civil disorder. And my dear friends, if this was only the problem, I wouldn't speak of it. But these are the tactics that are found in the campaign, Madison Avenue style, perfumed, deodorized, detergentized, all shined up and polished of my Republican opponent. Very definitely, a man who deliberately courted the most radical extremist elements in his own party and who continues this appeal in his speeches and who will be fully in their debt should he win the presidency. Attacks on the courts, vilification of our law enforcement officials, group against group and race against race. These tactics have stockpiled the ingredients for civil explosion. Now, I mentioned the Truth Squad. They're here, and they're listening to what I have to say. Well, I'll tell you something. If they'll tell the truth, we'll win this election hands down, going away. That's what I can tell you now. I hope this Republican Truth Squad will tell you about those 8 Republican years. I hope they'll tell you about Mr. Nixon, who wanted to send our armed forces into Vietnam 14 years ago, and that his president had to tell him to shut up. I hope they'll tell you the truth. If they do, we can all go fishing. It'll be all over. We'll win this election. Because what is the truth? The truth is that in those 8 Republican years, you had 3 recessions. And workers in this audience, if you will be honest with yourself and businessmen, you know that there was unemployment in Nashville and Tennessee. You know that the rate of unemployment in this nation stood at 7%. You know that it stands at less than 3.5% today. I hope they'll tell you the truth. I hope they'll tell you the truth that the farmers lost $3 billion in net income in those Republican years. I hope they'll tell you the truth that not a thing was done for federal aid to education. I hope they'll tell you the truth that the workers' income in those 8 years only went up 9%. And in these 8 Democratic years, after taxes, after the cost of living, the family income of a working family of 4 has gone up 32%. I hope they'll tell you the truth. I hope they'll tell you that the cost of that unemployment was $175 billion in lost income I hope they'll tell you a lot more truth. I hope they'll tell you that when the time came for Mr. Nixon to cast a vote as the presiding officer of the Senate to make it possible to have some help for our children in our schools on a tie vote, Mr. Nixon refused to vote and give the kids a break. I hope they'll tell you that. Oh, there's a lot I want them to tell you. And I hope they'll tell you something else. I hope they'll tell you that during those 8 years, little or nothing was done for Nashville. And I hope they'll tell you the truth that Mr. Nixon, who now whistles Dixie, let me tell you, the last Republican that ever did anything to the South was Sherman, and you know what he did to it. I hope they'll tell you the truth about this Republican candidate and his newfound affection for the TVA. Oh, that's as phony as a $3 bill. Let's lay it on the line. The Republican Party fought the TVA. Mr. Nixon never supported the TVA. He says he doesn't want to sell it. Of course he doesn't want to sell it. He'd rather mismanage it. I will say he's one step above Barry. Goldwater, that is, I mean. But ladies and gentlemen, it is nothing short of outright hypocrisy for a man to come around and say that he now loves the TVA when he spent a lifetime of public service cutting it to ribbons, slashing it, condemning it, and now he parades as his friend. Yes, I hope they'll tell the truth. I hope they'll tell the truth that during their 8 years, they didn't do a thing about the impoverished. I hope they'll tell the truth that during their 8 years, with unemployment up to almost 8%, 7.5%, they didn't have one workers program to train workers for jobs, not one. Not one single worker in a training program. I hope they'll tell the truth that during their administration, we had the biggest run on the gold supply that we've ever had in any 1 year. We Democrats are accused of not being very careful about money. Well, let me tell you, those Republicans, they took the padlock off and they went to a Fifth Avenue apartment and the money just flowed out of Fort Knox. Almost $4 billion of it in 1 year. I hope they'll tell you the truth. And I'll tell you something else. I hope that they'll tell you that under these Democratic years, that these young men that I see over here and others have had a better chance for an education than ever in their lives. Aid to higher education. 1 million young students today under college loans because of a federal government. I hope they'll tell you that 10 million of our children, men and women, have been lifted out of poverty in the last 5 years. I hope they'll tell you, Mr. Businessman, that in any one of the last 8 Democratic years, you've made more net profit than in all of the 8 Republican years put together. Now, that's not bad. So I've decided to tell the truth on the Truth Squad. All they need to do is to tell you the truth. A 300% increase in aid to education. A 300% increase in aid to health. I hope they'll tell the old folks in Tennessee that the Republican Party fought against Medicare and that Mr. Nixon said it wouldn't work. I hope they'll tell the truth that it was Lyndon Johnson and John Kennedy and Harry Truman that made possible Medicare, too. And I hope they'll tell the truth what Mr. Nixon said about the Peace Corps, the greatest thing that we've had for our country abroad, in which hundreds of thousands of our young people have served humanity. And what did Mr. Nixon call it? A haven for draft dodgers. And there isn't a draft dodger in the entire crowd, and he knows it. I hope they'll tell you the truth of what Mr. Nixon said about the nuclear test ban treaty that prevents the poison of radioactive fallout from killing off our children and generations yet unborn. He called it a cruel hoax. Yes, Mr. Republican, if you tell the truth, you'll never get into office. So, ladies and gentlemen, vote your own interests. Vote for yourselves. Vote for your country. You don't want a divided country. I look across this audience and see black and white. You and I know that you cannot judge people by race, you judge them by individuals. There's some good and there's some bad. Neither one has a monopoly on either one. We need an America that works together. We need an America in which the only way you judge a person is on merit. We need an America as we've never needed it before, where everybody has a chance to be a producing, self-respecting citizen. We need an America in which our cities are reborn. We need an America in which our elderly are cared for. We need an America in which every child from age 4 on up can have a chance for the best education that we know how to give him. We need an America, dear friends, that's unafraid. And we need an America that will lead for peace. And we need an America that is strong enough to command respect. And we need an America, my friends, that has given this nation the kind of leadership that this state represents. When I think of Andrew Jackson, way back to be sure, but he represented the character of the American people. I call to your attention the leadership of this party. In victory or defeat, to those that are a little older, I ask you to remember Franklin Roosevelt, who really lifted this country when he said, all we have to fear is fear itself. And I call to your attention that man of indomitable will and courage, who they said couldn't win. I've heard that too. Who they said had a lousy campaign. I've heard that too. Who they said was the underdog, and I've heard that too. Who they said 6 weeks before the end of the campaign he was behind in the polls, 16%. I've heard that too. But I want to tell you something. I get an inspiration out of the life and the works and the courage and the will and the scrappiness of Harry S. Truman. That's my kind of an American. And we need an America like John Kennedy wanted it to be when he said, let's get this country moving again. When he said to us, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. And we need an America like Adlai Stevenson when he said, let's talk sense to the American people. And I've been trying to talk sense to them. And we need an America like President Johnson, who has told this nation what it needed in terms of its children and its health, of its consumers, of its environment, of its cities, and of the world in which we live. I stand before this audience today proud to be a Democrat, but prouder to be an American. And I stand before this audience today asking you but one thing. If you want a united America, if you want a country that is one nation, under God and indivisible, and with liberty and justice for all. If you want it, we can get it. I ask you to help me get it. I need your help. I ask your help. And I say to you that together we can make this country sing. We can make this country realize its dream. We can do anything that we want to do that needs to be done. And we're not going to listen to the voices of reaction. We're not going to listen to the people that say, stand still. We're not going to listen to the slick salesmen of phony goods. We're going to listen to the truth. We're going to act on it, and we're going to be unafraid, and we're going to make this what Lincoln said it was, the last best hope of earth. So let's get on with the job. Thank you very much.